I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
She's a roofer, and
she's a roofer.
I don't know why I said it that way, but it's like
she's a roofer.
Yeah,
there's nothing like, wrong with, you know, patched up roofs for a living.
Yeah,
that's so funny.
There's nothing wrong with that, but it's like, what do we do with this lesbian? Let's put her on a
like,
roof.
Well, what she can only obviously do something with her hands. She could be a construction worker.
Yeah,
and that's it.
I'm ducking out. You're ducking out. Let's duck out together. See what it's all about.
Hi, and welcome to Dyking Out, the only podcast that wishes the beautiful and bisexual Gillian Anderson a happy birthday in its intro. Happy birthday, Gillian. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
I'm Sarah York.
So before we get into things, I do want to say for any of our London listeners that I will be performing some stand-up comedy in London September 12th and 13th. If you go to my website, cbcomedy.com, you will see where I will be having shows. I'm trying to add more shows. Right now there's only two, but I'm really excited, and I hope British people find me funny. Coincidentally, I'll also be there the same week that Cameron Esposito has sold out the Soho Theater, but that's okay because I'm going to be at Old Mary's Cocktail Bar, which, you know, sounds like a better venue for me because
I think that's good.
Like to think of myself as an Old Mary, and
don't we all? We're all a bunch of Old Marys.
Based on the listener that called me Carol in an email,
it was an amazing
aged
email.
Me about I'm not going to embarrass her by reading the email, but
great,
she did
we
call me
it.
Carol. And
please send us more emails once a week.
but yeah, so
you should have changed your name to Carol for 3 weeks instead of Carrie.
I will when I enter a nursing home. that'll be my next and last name change. Will be Carol. Yeah, Cameron's gonna be there. She's also gonna be recording her podcast Query because it's also the London Podcast Festival, and I somehow missed that one as well.
There's a podcast festival?
Yeah, I didn't plan this well because I'm going there for a wedding, and then I was like, oh, maybe I'll go a day early and do a show. And then I got booked on two shows. So I'm like, I'll go 2 days early and do shows and see London. I've actually never been to England, so I'm excited about that. But Karina sent me a message because she is on the pulse of all things lesbian.
She sure
to let
is.
Me know that Cameron Esposito and Rhea Butcher announced that they are separating.
Yeah, I saw that.
And little lesbian hearts broke.
Tis the season, man. I don't know. That sucks. I feel bad because they were mature and they did like the celebrity thing and they released like identical tweets basically at the exact same time.
And I think on Facebook and on Instagram.
Yeah.
Just putting that message out.
I would like to
everywhere.
Be famous enough to have to do that if I break up with someone.
Yeah.
To have no choice but to have like a nice, you know, a nice neat little statement to reach, you know, to release on all platforms. It is sad. I do feel bad because I think they're an awesome couple and I've not seen their show. Have you seen it? Take My Wife?
Take My Wife. I will say I tried watching the pilot and I didn't get all the way through it.
Okay.
Not to say that the pilot was bad or anything like that. It could have been, I don't know. There are a lot of things that I start and I don't finish for various reasons.
Social media has ruined my attention span to the point where if I don't finish something, it is not an indictment of the material. It's just that I was looking at my phone.
Something that is an indictment of the material. So a couple of people, including some listeners, have asked if we've seen the movie Below Her Mouth. So after I saw The Miseducation of Cameron Post, the more I thought about it, the more I liked it. I totally recommend seeing it if you haven't seen it. And it's, I don't know if I mentioned it last time, but it's directed by like a bisexual or queer Iranian woman. And I just think it was well done. The book's also great. They go well together. And I'm like, you know, I really enjoy watching movies with queer content, with lesbian stories, and I haven't made time for that in a while. So I'm like, I'm going to watch this movie Below Her Mouth. So last night I go to watch it and...
It's called Below Her Mouth.
Below Her Mouth.
It sounds a little pornographic.
It is the worst thing. It's not even worth watching it for what might be hot lesbian sex later on. I wouldn't know. I turned it off. Maybe
it does have a whopping 23% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Right? I don't know how anybody put that out there and attached their name to it. The writing, the acting, everything about it is so bad. And it was created by women, which is like the thing that hurts most about it.
Because
if you just watched it, you would think like,
and then you
oh,
look at, you would think I'm going to look at the screenwriter
this.
And it's a man, but it's not.
Yeah, you would definitely think it's either a man or some like really
were
repressed
the sex
straight
good?
Woman. I only saw the one in the beginning and it wasn't good because she was like all detached in it because she's kind of like a Shane type. I couldn't get through it. So then I turned that off. And then one of the like the recommended, like if you like this, you might like this. And the movie Duck Butter came up, which was one I wanted to see in theaters and never did. And that's with Aaliyah Shawkat, who's only 29.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, everyone's so successful is younger than
she's
me.
So good for her age, man. She's done so much. So Duck Butter is the movie about these two women that meet in a club in LA and they decide to get to know each other by having sex every hour.
What? That's the worst way to do anything.
But this is the thing. It's co-written by Aaliyah Shawkat.
Really?
So I'm like,
that's
loving
exhausting.
The fact that she's like, I'm going to write this movie that requires me to do 24 sex scenes
with
a lady.
I see now. Okay.
That's why
wouldn't that just get like exhausting after a while? Like,
I don't know. I didn't get
I'm
through
all
the
about
whole
like
thing.
Having sex when you barely know each other. That's fine. But like, every hour. I don't know. I don't really get it.
You know, it's like an artist journey type thing.
Oh,
when you watch it, they're just kind of like, what if we just get to know each other like in a short amount of time and like condense all the bullshit that you spread out and like, and it kind of mounts. They're like, what if we spend all this time together? And then one of them's like, and have sex every hour. And it's like, yes. And then
so they're young lesbians in their first relationship. Yeah.
So I didn't finish watching the movie because I am a lesbian and I have a bedtime. I can't stay up past midnight. And after wasting my time on the last one, I didn't get very far, but it is on Netflix. So if you're deciding between movies to watch, Below Her Mouth is a No Way Jose and Duck Butter is one
slightly
maybe
better.
Two thumbs up.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen any of the lesbian finger classes. That's amazing.
That's how I'm going to
review
all
movies. 2 out of 3 hourly finger bangs.
We're going to create a new system for lesbian movies, and it's going to be based on how good the lesbian sex is. I can already tell that the movie Lizzie is going to be 4 finger bangs, which
for
is
sure.
the max finger bangs that a movie can have, but I'm pretty sure it's getting 4.
I rarely go into a recording an episode thinking, how many times are we going to say the word finger bangs? But today, really blew it out of the water.
I leave every episode thinking I didn't say finger bangs enough. And another thing that's going to lead us into our topic. Oh, you might notice we're doing things a little bit differently this time because our guest today is a very important lady, and mm-hmm. she's doing so much stuff that we want to talk about that we didn't want to rope her into our finger banging conversation and risk her fleeing the studio. Yeah. So we're getting this all out of the way first, and then Amy Siskin will be joining us, and we're so excited about it. And we'll give her a proper intro in a second. But kind of related to that, Charisse Davids secured the Democratic nomination for Kansas's 3rd congressional district.
Yep.
She is Native American, she is a lesbian, and she is an ex-MMA fighter, and I love it.
I mean, that's her entire platform. Like, everything about her just checks all the boxes for someone I, A, would love to hang out with.
Yes.
B, I'm intensely intimidated by.
Yes.
And C, someone that we desperately need, because I cannot believe that we have never had a Native American person in Congress. That's like, I mean, actually, I can't believe it, but
yes,
that's really, really damning, I think, of our system and the way that we've treated Native people.
Oh, God.
It's overdue. I have a really hard, as someone who is from that area, basically, entire extended family is from Kansas. My parents are originally from there. It's hard. I don't have a lot of faith in Kansas voters, but we'll see. As far as like actually electing her, like the primary is one thing, but like I really, really hope she gets elected. Please, if you're in Kansas, help door knock for her. But
I think it's a Democratic district.
Yeah.
All right. I think the district did go for Hillary in the general election.
Oh, that's good.
So
yeah.
I
haven't looked too
chance.
Far into the actual demographics of the district, but
yeah. I mean, it's also that she was running against a bunch of different progressive people, and she's the one that they chose.
That's
so
good.
That's
great.
Very encouraging. And if you live in that area, do everything you can. If you don't live in that area, you can always donate. As much as money in politics sucks, it can make a difference. Mm-hmm. And I also do not like reducing a woman to her looks, but she's hot.
She is hot.
She's really hot. And, you know, I'm sick of looking at pictures of Congress and having all these old, ugly old man bags of
just like
skin.
Old. They look like just big thumbs with suits on.
Yeah.
They're just gross.
Yeah.
We need just more like hot people.
For the good of the country.
We do.
I think people would pay more attention.
I mean, I have a huge crush on Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I think she's hot.
Oh, yeah. That
she's
too.
A babe.
Yes.
That's kind of a given.
All these babes. Not only are like record number of women running, but a record number of babes.
Yeah.
And again, you don't have to be a babe, and nothing against non-babes, because you women are also awesome and bring
right.
a lot to the table.
Yeah.
I'm a feminist.
Yeah.
I promise. Oh, I'm really glad Amy wasn't here to hear me reduce.
She's going to hate this episode. She's not listening to this episode. There's no way.
She doesn't have time.
Yeah.
She doesn't have time. She's documenting everything that's going on right now. I mean,
she's following the Mueller investigation really closely, which is why I love following her on Twitter, because it is literally my main interest these days is following this situation. And today, in fact, is when like some cool shit happened, which we'll talk to her about a little bit. I just need a little bit. I need a little bit of Mueller discussion with her.
I didn't come up with any questions about that, figuring you would have that covered.
Mm-hmm.
I do have some very expected questions from me, which she might not expect, but I have to ask, but you'll have to stay tuned until the end of the episode to see what is Carolyn going to subject this very accomplished
I'm so nervous right now.
Woman to. I'm very nervous.
We're both like, I wish that people could actually see like how we're sitting awkwardly in our chairs. Like, I don't usually sit like this.
Yeah, I've been nervous about this for weeks, ever since she agreed to do the podcast. So what happened was I met her in person at this event, this panel for empowering women. I went there and then I like awkwardly stood around, you know, when people wait to stand and talk to speakers.
Oh, yeah.
And then I gave her a Diking Out business card with my wrong name on it. and said, would you like to be on a podcast called Diking Out? And she was like, absolutely. I'm like, oh my God.
Great. I love that.
This is happening. And then I texted Sarah a picture of the two of us together because I was so excited.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, let's get to the interview, guys. We hope you enjoy it as much as we know we will.
All right.
So today we are diking out with Amy Siskin about activism. Amy is a national spokesperson, writer, and expert on helping girls advance and succeed. She is the president of The New Agenda. She's an LGBTQ rights activist, and she started a very important project turned book turned now podcast called The Weekly List. Amy, thank you and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
So your podcast is coming out very soon, right?
I'm actually just on week 11. It drops every Monday morning and it summarizes the week prior and gives some analysis to the lists in written form, some trends and some kind of putting pieces of the puzzle together as they start to develop.
How do you even know where to begin?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I guess I'm sort of like the movie The Rain Man. I have this encyclopedic knowledge since I've read every article since November 2016 that's been in the list. And so when things pop up, they make sense to me in a much broader scheme of things. I mean, like, I have Donald Trump on the brain straight through since November 2016. So an item will come up relating to Cambridge Analytica or Sinclair Broadcasting or Donald Jr., and it will make sense to me in a context of other items that have happened along the way. And so the list itself is now around 160 to 170 not normal items each week. And then the podcast is really meant, you know, as people told me, this made me so psyched that a woman who like was a factory worker told me she didn't have time to keep up with the news during the week, but she listens to the podcast Monday on her way to work. That was exactly what I had hoped by design would happen, that people who don't have the luxury of being on Twitter or don't, you know, or are aggravated listening to cable news and just want to get down to the brass tacks of what's happening without spin, I can present them in a summarized form of 50 minutes, everything that they need to know. And what's happened and what I observe with the list is it might be 160, 170 items, but 80% of the media's coverage will be on, say, 20 to 30 of those items. And the rest of the items, other than single source coverage, got no attention. And yet they're important stories that
sure
form the mosaic of what we're experiencing, mm-hmm, especially as relates to marginalized communities. Those stories get very little coverage. And that was actually what pushed me to start the podcast was, you know, the fact that those stories were not getting the attention they deserved.
Yeah, that's something that I think about with everything, all of the assault that's happening on the environment, on immigrants, the just unapologetic racism that's happening in policy across the board, that when it comes specifically to LGBTQ rights, there's also a lot of bad stuff going on there, but I feel like I'm not even on top of it, even though
right
it affects my life directly, just because it's this fire hose of
yeah
news that's being thrown at us.
Yeah. And that's what the list is meant to do, that you can sort by like LGBTQ and you can see the rights and protections we've lost already. And it started right away. And the pattern for our community, as with every marginalized community and the environment and science, is from the get-go in the early weeks as he took office, information would disappear for us in week 10, I believe it was, right as he was taking office. An apology from the State Department for past slights against the LGBT community was removed and disappeared. There was a page on the LGBT community that was taken down from the government website. Mm-hmm. There's information relating to our community from the HUD website that's been taken down. It's legal to discriminate as a federal employee because of Sessions against our community. One of the first things Sessions tried to do was to say sexual orientation shouldn't be part of the Civil Rights Act of the 1960s. Yep. So those are the kind of things that are captured in the list, and those are the kind of things, you're right, we're living in chaos. And so the seeing it in written form, if you can get through the 160 to 170 items, you'll see the things that are being taken away. And if you can't, then I talk about them in the podcast. But that's, I think, like the beauty of writing things down and having the list out as a book is that when this is over, we can kind of trace our way back and say, wow, that protection was lost for the environment. That information on science disappeared. That protection for a marginalized community was taken away in week 80, 83 or whatever it was, and then work to undo what's been happening for the last year and a half.
When did you get the idea to start the list? Did it start off with the hashtag not normal?
No, it wasn't related to that. It was shortly after the election because I run a national women's organization and had been visible in politics, and a lot of people were looking to me for what's next. And I had observed during the election and then after the election that Trump didn't have a traditional set of policies or an agenda the way a typical Republican or Democrat would, and he still doesn't. And after he won the election, and I use "won" in quotes, there was a record amount of hate crimes in our country. And given the opportunity to condemn those, Trump said we should grant understanding to both sides, which is something he's continued to talk about. And just the legitimized hate, it just reminded me very much of the uprise of Hitler. I'm a Jewish American. And so I started to read up on authoritarianism. And one of the takeaways that really came through to me loud and clear was the idea of writing things down. Mm-hmm. And the Saturday after the first full week of the election, I guess that would be, it was November 19th is the day of the first list, I went up to the home of Eleanor Roosevelt, who is sort of my North Star, and I went to her home, Valkill, and I, at this point, I've been there so many times I could practically give tours, but I felt like I needed some spiritual guidance, and just, the ideas that she spoke about, that we the people are our government and we are our democracy, and the idea of writing things down. I got home that night from Valkill and wrote the first week's list, and the graphic that accompanied that first week was a New York Times reporter who had criticized his own paper's coverage. That was the day, that day in November, that Trump was criticizing the New York Times, the cast of SNL, and the cast of Hamilton.
Yep.
And he had been critical of his own paper's coverage, and then I screenshot it, thankfully. The next morning I woke up, he had deleted his own tweet, which I was like, wow, that's strange.
Oh, my God.
So that's the picture that accompanies week one of the weekly list, which is at theweeklylist.org. And I put a lot of time each week with a woman who helps me out with it into the pictures. They really tell the story each week of what's happening. But yeah, so that was the rationale behind it, was just that things were not normal, and I just could sense the importance of writing things down to have a record of what was happening.
So you have a long history of being politically active, and I was kind of wondering, because now, you see a lot of people who are really fired up in a way that maybe they weren't before, but you've been very involved for a long time now. Wanted to hear more about, like, what are your first memories of getting involved in politics or a cause, and how did that start for you?
So I, out of college, my first 20 years out of college, worked on Wall Street. So my involvement, because of the hours I worked, was more related to donating to candidates. And I would vote, but I wasn't particularly politically engaged. And as I was leaving that world in 2006, My daughter was writing, she was in third grade at that point, she was writing a paper, she had to write on a paper on somebody famous, and she was going to do like Alex Rodriguez from the Yankees, and I said, no, pick a woman. So she picked Hillary Clinton, and Hillary happened to be speaking at the Hilton, June 2006, right near where I worked. So I had my daughter come in. We went to the lunch. There were thousands of people. This is when she was a senator. And afterwards, Amanda went up, my daughter, and showed her her report. And Hillary, like, read it and was commenting on it and asked her about her grade. And I was like, wow, I really like this woman. And so after I stopped working on Wall Street, I got involved when she ran for re-election in the Senate. And then through that when she ran for president in 2008. And that was just an awakening for me as a woman because, you know, I guess this is atypical, but I really didn't find in my career that I suffered from being a woman in Wall Street. I actually was successful in what I did. And the way Hillary was mistreated in the media and the double standard was such an awakening for me that in 2008, I co-founded with 30 women around the country an organization that I still run called The New Agenda to address the mistreatment and the double standard that women suffered not only in politics but in all realms. And we were revolutionary at the time and still are in a way, but less so now, but because we decided to be inclusive of all women. So we weren't party aligned. We just felt like if a woman is mistreated in the media or there's a double standard for a woman running, it hurts all of us. So since then, I obviously got involved in defending a lot of women candidates, a lot of women in corporate America, and was very involved in this most recent election. And then afterwards, I'm just trying to get as many women into office as I can. I'm really thrilled that some of my mentees now are candidates. The woman running against the ringleader of the IDC in New York State is one of my mentees that I got into politics, Alessandra Biaggi. And she's got a really good chance to take down somebody who's been running in the state Senate, a senior person for decades. And she's spectacular. And I just had a fundraiser for her at my house on Sunday. And that's like the neatest part about what I do, being able to mentor young women and help women and women of color and LGBT women run for office and have their back. I just got off a phone call with somebody right before we did this podcast who's running, will be the majority leader in the New York State Senate, Andrea Stewart Cousins, if things go the way, and talking to her about, she just got a challenge in the primary. So I'm somebody that people call and I do everything I help to get women into office. So That's an honor to and a privilege to see these people that you know and love running. So it's great.
For sure.
Do you think that that's so for me every day, I basically have the same routine. I wake up and I spend about 2.5 seconds before it hits me that Trump is president. When I'm in that sort of, I just woke up, that little haze. And then the rest of my day, I spend trying to be productive and also trying to sort of pick through all of the, like Carolyn said earlier, the fire hose of shitty information coming to us all the time and glean some sort of like little nuggets of hope for the future. And I keep clinging on to the increase of these women running for office and particularly young people and young women becoming like aware of how our government functions. I mean, isn't that like, to me, that seems like, if I have to pick one good thing coming out of this, it's that now all of a sudden we've all been like awoken, and we've been woken up in the middle of the night by a cold bucket of water on our face. And now we have to look around and actually realize how this shit works and like how we can actually change it. So do you feel the same way? I mean, are you optimistic that the energy generated right now is something that can carry through and become like a new normal as far as the way our electoral processes work?
Yeah, so I wish I had that extra 2.5 seconds. You're lucky. Enjoy that while you
I love it. It's great.
You know, when I my book first came out and I was asked by the media, there must be something good that you can say about Trump, I would say, well, thanks to him, we have the Me Too movement, because I've run a women's organization for 10 years and progress has been pretty slow and linear. And now it's just like a bonfire. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just this last week, how exciting it is that we potentially will have our first Native American woman in Congress, yes. Our first Muslim American woman in Congress, November 2017, our first transgender woman in Virginia state legislator, mm-hmm. the first lesbian mayor in Seattle, like women of color and winning overwhelmingly in Alabama for court seats. I mean, it's just been amazing. And I do think there's an awakening and an effort to fight and to run like nothing I've ever seen. And I'm hoping that it's long lasting. I think there's a huge historic gender gap. And one thing that I was extremely upset about and ashamed of as a white woman in 2016 is that 53% of white women voted for Trump. And the alignment of these predominantly suburban white women have changed. And they're not going to be part of the Republican base unless things change. So I suspect that two things are going to occur on election night. First off, the fact, like the people we're talking about, our friends who never were politically involved, and certainly in our local races that we've had in between 2016 and 2018, our county legislator, George Latimer, won a race that was supposed to be close by, I think, around 15 points. And people that I've never seen show up for presidential polls, presidential races, showed up and are showing up. And the other thing that I think is not accounted for properly are the people graduating high school this year, my son being one, all of whom are planning to vote. I think there'll be a huge surge, and they're not being monitored now by the polling companies, certainly in Florida, but in every state. But I do believe this is an exciting time for women and an awakening for our country generally for women. And I don't believe Trump is going to be the candidate in 2020. We can talk about that if you want. But I think 2018 is going to be a big night, despite the fact there will be interference and things that will not go right because of Russia and whoever else is trying to hack our election. I think nonetheless, it's going to be a historic night for Democrats.
So I was going to bring that up later, but I guess we can go there now because, you know, you say that you don't think he's going to be the candidate in 2020, which I would love to believe. It's almost like because of the disappointment of election night, I kind of almost in my mind
think, I've lost all ability to, like, think, oh, surely this won't happen.
Yeah, yeah. You know? I'm like too scared to feel like that would be insane.
Yeah.
And almost like when Roy Moore was running, I just thought, you know what? He's probably going to win. I'm going to donate money.
Right.
I'm going to spread the word for Doug Jones. But this gross old man is gonna win. And when he didn't, it was like a pleasant surprise.
Right. But I mean, with the state of the Republican Party right now, they can't get their shit together to, I mean, if you don't mind like saying who you think it might be, like who would you guess that they would put up in 2020? Because I can't think of anyone that is even has the, the backbone to stand up to Trump.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's going to be Trump, not because he won't, that he'll still be there to run against somebody mm-hmm. else. I think he'll be out of office before 2020.
Okay.
Yeah. And we can talk about that. But if you're asking me who I think it will be, my guess is there'll be a primary with many people. And I think Nikki Haley could be a surprise candidate to be their candidate.
Yeah.
But I think you're more asking, do I believe Donald Trump will make it to 2020? And to that, my answer is no.
I mean, everything seems so obviously that he shouldn't be with the amount of stuff, but it's like the Teflon factor. But you've been following obviously everything so closely. What are you predicting is going to be the timeline for things?
Yeah. So when my book came out in late March, and I started to talk about the three things that I thought would take him down. Those are still the three things, although they've all made tremendous progress in those months since. The first thing that I thought could possibly take him down was what we're talking about, the Me Too movement and the fact that he had been paying off women, and we know of two. Mm-hmm. When my first book came out, you know, Clifford and Stephanie Clifford and Karen McDonough, who, you know, he not only did he pay to be silent right before the election, but there was potential other intimidation and bullying and so on and so forth. You know, since then, we have Michael Cohen being raided by the FBI. We have Michael Cohen cooperating. Mm-hmm. All the documents related to Cohen have been turned over. He potentially is going to be a witness or is applying to be a witness against Trump. Trump's bookkeeper, also, who has all the records, including his tax records, has been subpoenaed in that probe. And that's all part of what's happening in the Southern District of New York. And so they have all the payments. They have records of all the payments. Mm-hmm. They likely, you know, now that they just completed the discovery and the documentation today, will start to, you know, move forward on the trial with Cohen. So keep an eye on that and what else comes out of that. I suspect you're going to see a trail of a lot of women, a lot of efforts to silence ahead of the election, which is illegal. You know, Trump at first said he didn't do it. Now he did do it. So that's one potential area. And I think we know, like, the very tip of the iceberg of the number of women and what was done there. The second area is the Mueller probe. And I think we're just starting to see that get well underway. I think Mueller set out these 25 indictments against Russians to sort of set the stage that it was indisputable that Russia did hack our election. And now that that's been done, you start to see these other cases open that draw that closer to Trump. You see the Butina trial, mm-hmm, where she is accused of being a Russian spy, and she's all over my book as meeting with Donald Jr. right before the election, right before his meeting, his June 9th meeting as well. She met with him in May 2016. She was part of the NRA, which donated money to Trump, $21 million of dark money that could have come from Russia, is very likely to have come from Russia, which is also illegal.
Yep.
So she's got all sorts of entanglements with people that get close to Trump. It came out this week in the list that J.D. Gordon, who worked for Trump as well, was texting and in contact with her months before the election as well. And I suspect we'll see a lot more there. Mueller is also, this week, has three subpoenas out to people in Roger Stone's orbit. Mm-hmm. So you can guess Roger Stone is going to be reeled into this. Donald Jr. So you kind of get the sense that we're, you know, he's taken this one step closer. And and I know all these things and I'm so knowledgeable, I still didn't know about Papadopoulos. I still didn't know Alex Vanderwijk, who has been in jail and out of jail and deported. So there's a whole lot that we don't know. I spend a lot of time analyzing Deutsche Bank. I think there's a lot that's going to come from there, and these bank records and the loans to to Trump and to Kushner right before the election of $285 million. There's all sorts of areas within that realm. And I think he's very nervous now. And I think especially if we take over the Congress, you know, he's worried, and he damn well should be. So that's the second area. The third area, last summer I made the Politico 50, and they said, what's the story that's not being covered? And I said Cambridge Analytica, which is all over my book and all over, when I say one with quotation marks, there was so many irregularities that are well documented in my book. Things that were, you know, in North Carolina, in red districts, voting rolls would work fine. In the blue districts next door, which were African-American, there would be problems. So even though we're not looking at that today, other than the reporting, believe me, that's being looked at in this probe. And I'm still not sure we had a fair election. And, Trump's attitude and how he acted after the Helsinki meeting and what's going on, I think it's fertile ground to figure out whether there was something illegal and whether they were complicit in that. Don't forget, Cambridge Analytica and Facebook sat in the office with Brad Parscale. Mm-hmm. So that is still a story to be told. So those are the three areas. And I always say the biggest thing we have going for us is Trump believes he's the best at everything he does, including being his own attorney. And these texts that he sends, tweets that are incriminating, like saying, well, Donald Jr. wanted the dirt on Hillary and it's not illegal. Mm-hmm. You can like win in the court of public opinion, but that doesn't mean jack when you get into the actual court. And you said in your tweets that he knew that he was asking for dirt on Hillary. And then 20 minutes after that meeting, Trump tweeted about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, all these things we know a little bit about. These are all trails that I'm sort of tracing. I'm like Carrie in Homeland. I have all these trails I'm tracing in my mind that keep advancing, though. Like the yeah. amount that all these stories have advanced, even in the 3 months my book has been out, it's amazing. So we're going to wake up one morning and there's going to be an indictment against Donald Jr. or Roger Stone or, you know, Kushner or somebody. You know, there's just so many possibilities out there. Huh. And it's either going to happen before September 6th or we're going to have to wait till after the election. The, you know, these special counsels typically take at least 1,000 days on average. So it might not be yeah. as quick as we want, but I don't believe he can weather through this. And I think his behavior with Russia was so uncharacteristically not normal yeah. that yeah, I mean, even his own voters were concerned about his actions with Russia. His popularity is very low. So yeah. we'll see what happens after this next election. But we just have no idea.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, my kids roll their eyes when I say uncharted territory. We just don't know. We're going to wake up one morning and maybe a name we've never heard of, or maybe somebody that, don't forget, Flynn's cooperating, Papadopoulos is cooperating, Gates is cooperating. You know, mm-hmm. there's a whole long list of people that were in his inner circle that are working with Mueller. So they're just, they've got all of the timelines in place. They're just looking for like little bits of information to complete their work. And I think if I had my bet, I think Roger Stone I wouldn't be booking any like long-term travel tickets if I were him.
Did you ever think that you would one day issue a statement that is completely plausible and referring to the president's inner circle as a Gambino-style roll-up like you did today?
I've been saying that for a long time. It's exactly what's happening.
That was great.
It's like it's very
It literally methodical. Is. I mean, it follows the Think same, we're in the part of the movie now where like the mobster has been, you know, on coke for 4 days and is like running from he's like the Ray Liotta looking out the window and the helicopters are circling in. I think that to me, that's what I'm sort of gleaning from his, kind of thrashing around on Twitter and, quite literally trying to distract us with a big shiny new branch of the military. So yeah, I mean, I am. It's like my main source of entertainment is to follow the Mueller probe, even though it's not entertaining. It's very solemn and serious. How quickly and how swiftly, like how succinctly, do you think that Trump is going to throw Jared Kushner under the bus when the time comes?
Oh, so quick it will make your head spin.
Yeah, I think that guy.
I think everybody. It's sort of like every time people ask, I say, I wish I had a law degree and a degree in psychology.
Yeah.
Because everybody that I've had a lot of psychologists come to my events and try to explain Donald Trump to me. But it doesn't seem, with the exception of Ivanka, who he's got this strange who knows what with, I don't think he would protect yeah. anybody, including Donald Jr. I mean, he basically...
on
Saturday basically confessed yeah. to a crime for his son.
And
he's trying to fight, which has worked for him in his campaign, this battle of public opinion. But again, doesn't matter jack in the courts. If they have the evidence, it doesn't really matter. If they know who Donald Jr. called, even though we in the public domain know it's a block call, if they know who those calls were and it was Trump ahead of the meeting and Trump approved of a meeting where dirt from a foreign adversary was offered without, you know, reporting that, that's extremely damning. So I remember when Mueller was appointed a little over a year ago and everyone said it's going to take over a year, just be patient. And I was like, oh, fuck, because everyone's going to lose their patience. And we kind of all did.
Yeah.
But remember, it's only been a little more than a year. And look at all the indictments and all the people that are cooperating. Like,
oh, for
you
sure.
think Michael Flynn doesn't have a thing or two to say? Or Gates,
oh, yeah.
or, you know, if they get Cohen. And I'm really, the thing that excites me in the Gambino roll-up is the accountant, his bookkeeper for decades, who was his dad's
yeah.
bookkeeper,
yep.
who prepared his taxes. That guy's got everything.
That's how Al Capone got caught. I mean, that's like...
Exactly. I'll take whatever it is. Like, I don't know what's going to bring him down, but there's no way he can survive all these things with a limited legal staff and how bad he is in terms of being disciplined and smart. He's his own right. worst enemy.
Well, so. I mean, his attorneys won't even stick around. Giuliani's there just because it gets him on the Sunday shows. But, you know, I would assume any decent lawyer is not going to attach their name to this obviously guilty person who won't even take their advice. So,
yeah, I'm surprised Flood is still there.
Yeah.
He's had like this track of record of people leaving other than Sekulow, mm-hmm. who's his own long-term personal attorney. But I'm surprised that Flood is still there. And I suspect that we'll probably see a subpoena against him, if not before the election, shortly thereafter. But a lot can happen between now and then. Then there's all the other cases we're not talking about, like Summer Zervos, who has the right to bring him into court and depose him and get his tax returns. All, you know, there's all sorts of satellite things that kind of pop up now and then. There's just no way he can survive this.
Yeah,
I just don't have the insight to know which one's going to get him first.
Right. But.
So here's
the important question, though. Who is going to play Robert Mueller in the eventual movie made about this?
I know, that's a good question.
I think it's got to be Clooney. It has to be. We owe that to Robert Mueller.
That's very nice. Yeah. That's the least we could do for Robert Mueller.
Yeah.
You know, all the things you list, like, yes, every time I see this, I'm like, well, it's just, I need to be patient, mm-hmm. even though the days are moving like dog ears. Like, I need to be patient and like let this play out, and the justice system will hopefully work and then he'll be gone. But I don't think getting rid of Trump hurts Trumpism. I don't know. Like, do you think that, like, that somebody else could just come in, another loud, racist, anti-immigration? Like, so at the rate that people are losing faith in the press and the rate at which hate is being aimed at immigrants and immigrants in the press are being treated as the enemy, I worry that some of that is not
permanent.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think eventually, obviously, it could be reversed, but not before something horrible happens. Mm-hmm. And
like, do you think that what Trump has created in this really vicious anti-press and anti-immigrant rhetoric, not that any of that's brand new, but he has certainly emboldened these people. Do you think that he's set precedents from his office that we can't recover from, that he's opened the door for a future, you know, Trump 2.0 to come in?
No, I think that there'll be a direct reaction in the other direction when he's out of office. And I don't believe he's Republican or Democrat. I believe this is a battle for our democracy.
Yeah.
I think he rose to power, and it was very easy for him to do this because he's a racist as well, but on the back of roughly a third of our country who are, you know, have been there all along. They're blatantly racist, homophobic, mm-hmm. misogynist, whatever it is, xenophobic. So I think a third mm-hmm. a third of our country basically, you know, has been emboldened to be in the light of day, whereas mm-hmm. prior to Trump, they would be saying these things and thinking these things, but doing it quietly in hushed tones in closed door spaces. And he's emboldened and given them a voice, but that part of our country was always there. And when people ask, I say a third of our country is going to stay with him no matter what, because mm-hmm. they don't believe in gay marriage and they don't believe that black people should be in the workplace or women, or that Muslim Americans should be allowed in our country. And they believe our country should be more white and that white people have lost their place. Those people existed before Trump and they'll exist after. The good news is the other 65%, many of whom were not politically involved, are now engaged, which goes back to our earlier point. And a lot of people mm-hmm. care about our democracy. They care about what their kids are consuming in the era of Trump. So I kind of think the opposite will happen, sort of in the way that I think in some ways Barack Obama's presidency, the fact that an African-American man could be president – was in some ways created, you know, the birtherism movement, the idea that how can this be, and then gave rise to somebody like the possibility of Trump. So, you know, two steps forward, he's our one step back. And then I think after this, what we're going to see is that things that we studied in high school that we thought were laws but turn out just to be norms mm-hmm. are going to be codified. You know, see, like in Rhode Island, they have voted in their state assembly to make it mandatory that any presidential candidate has to give out 5 years of their tax returns. Because those are things that were norms, mm-hmm. and now we're going to codify them. So Rhode Island will be first. That kind of thing will spread. There'll be all sorts of things that we took for granted, these checks and balances that we're going to learn in our fragile democracy didn't work out. And yeah. I know, and I think it's going to be a time of change. I think politics will change forever. I think, you know, I'm an optimistic person by nature, but I also see what's happening in our country. You know, the record number of not only women, but people of color and LGBT people running for office. I think this is going to forever change what we look for in the people that run for office and what we expect of them. And I think some of that will be set into law. And those people, you know, I always feel like the best way to deal with discrimination or racism or fear of others is to bring it into the light of day. Mm-hmm. And then you see that it's there, and then you can take it from there. I mean, the fact that Laura Ingraham got on her show last night and basically did a white nationalist rant and felt like she could do that in prime time, that's where we are. And that's what he's legitimized, and that's how he keeps his people excited. But there's still – the thing you have to remember, his popularity is where it started, which was low. He's never gotten above 50%. The closest he's gotten is when our media – which has done a very mixed job with him still, gave him Super Bowl-type coverage for the Singapore summit. Other than that, his approval has largely been, you know, around 40%. He has not moved. So our country hasn't changed. I think it's just awoken the other, again, 60 to 65% of Americans that are decent Americans and don't want this vision of what he brings to us. So, no, I think he is a one-time pony. And when he's done, there's going to be a move back to where we were and a whole different area. That will be a great thing for our country, but we'll have a lot of damage. Don't underestimate the years, if not decades, of damage that this man has already done.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I do think it's encouraging to see all these women and minorities running for office almost on short notice. Like, I imagine 3 years ago, a lot of people, you know, even before Donald Trump was the nominee, would have never thought of running for office, and now they are. So it makes me hopeful that, you know, 2 years from now, 4 years from now, 10 years from now, we're going to get so much closer to balanced representation that actually reflects the population of this country. One thing I want to ask you, speaking about activism, is that I think sometimes it can feel like an overwhelming thing, that a lot of people might feel like our problems are too big, that the enemies are too powerful. If you don't have money, if you're somebody that works a lot of hours and you feel like you don't have enough time, it's kind of like, why bother? But what are some things that anybody could do to help support both women and people of color and immigrants get closer to equal footing in the society? What do you think are like it? Like, if you're going to spend your time doing something to make a difference, what do you think we should prioritize?
Yeah, well, two things. One, I think knowledge is empowering and staying involved is empowering. And I remember the anecdote. We have a Young Woman Leadership Council as part of my organization. And there was, we had a retreat last year, and one of the women who was Muslim American, her mother had told her to just ignore what was happening and not pay attention. And she said that was so disempowering to her. Mm-hmm. And it really stuck with me. And I'm really a big believer that being up to speed on what's happening and being active is a feeling of empowerment. Looking away is disempowering. So a practical tool, if you work during the week and you don't have time, listen to my podcast for 50 minutes and you'll know everything you need to know each week about what you missed. If you don't want to look at Twitter all day and look at Facebook all day and catch up on the news, and that will catch you up for 50 minutes. I also believe courage is easier than fear, that to be involved and engaged. And I try not to be prescriptive because every person is different. But, you know, if you work 5 days a week, try to find time on weekends to use Swing Left, to attend a campaign rally if you have the finances to donate. So much of what's happening, though, isn't money aligned. Like, you know, when I had this event for Alessandro Biaggi, there were people that, like, were so excited that day they were going to spend the next Sunday knocking on doors. So you can knock on doors, you can send postcards, you can get friends involved, but do something, because being active is empowering. And you know, these like little things stick with me. Like when people ask me to sign their books, and one of a grandmother had two for her grandchildren. She said, I just want them to know that I fought for them and our way of life. And I want to give it to them signed by you, that I was paying attention and I was fighting for them.
Wow.
You know, and I really think it's powerful. Like I remember reading these tweets early on that people were saying, you know, you wonder what you would do during the uprising of Hitler, wonder what you were doing there. This is what you're doing now. So I know we're all super busy. I know many people are working two or three jobs to make ends meet. But when you have those quiet moments, and whatever it is for you, and whatever time and your financial, you know, situation allows, try to do something or show up and march or, you know, protest. Just do what you can do within your realm, so you can feel like in 10 years when we look back at this time, or in 5 years or in 2 years, that you played your part, whatever that part allowed. Nobody's judging anybody else. But, you know, I think if you wake up in the morning, you know, this is like what drives me crazy with this Green Party stuff. If you're privileged enough to throw away your vote right now, then, you know, don't do it this year, because there are people waking up in the morning, you know, and I've like, the woman who does my website is amazing. She's a naturalized citizen. They're talking about taking away citizenship for naturalized people.
Oh, I know.
You know, for people that are here with green cards. You know, if your skin isn't white and you're not straight and male, you wake up in the morning at risk. If you're rich and you're privileged enough not to care, then you still need to get involved. Though, you know, because there are so many people in our country waking up every day worried about walking down the street and carrying their passport because their skin is brown, that they might be rounded up going to Costco. I mean, seriously, this is like literally happening in this is not our country.
Yeah.
We love our country. We have to fight for our country and take it back. So that's my advice, is to just get involved in whatever way you can.
Yeah, I mean, that I've kind of oscillated between points where I'm like, this anxiety is too much and I can't keep consuming all this. But I find that all the times when I do feel best has been when I've gotten involved in backing a candidate, and backing especially women and women of color, and then also going out to these protests and meeting other people and seeing the passion that, like, surround yourself with people who are passionate about the fight. And that feels so much better than just pretending that it's not there and kind of plugging your ears and humming. And, you know,
although I still do that sometimes.
Yes. I know. It's hard. Well, my wife, I married a Peruvian immigrant, and she, like, we're still waiting for our green card interview, which has been, like, delayed tremendously. And I have this everyday fear that, like, someone's going to hear her speak Spanish, or, like, and, like she came here legally, and she came, legally, let me say that very clearly. She did come here legally and did everything the right way. And still, like, now the new standard is that that's not enough for her to stay in this country. And it's, you know, you've got to fight. Where I'm like fighting for my wife to be able to stay in this country with me. It's crazy, but
all of us. And I mean, I think there's certain turning points, there's inflection points. I think what happened with the migrant families, which is when and part of the reason I started my podcast, because that was going on for weeks before the media finally covered it. But I think that there are situations like that. And I remember when the media did start to finally go down to the border and cover it, people would come up to me and said, oh, you're right. Like, okay, you weren't overreacting. Between that and Helsinki, I think those are just, you know, turning points for so many people in our country, and awakening points that, oh my God, that, you know, forget that there are 4,600 brown people that are dead in Puerto Rico, or, you know, that we're tearing families apart and still, like, doing that. And Trump reunited 2/3 of them and is like, wow, I did great. I'm brilliant. After tearing them apart. I mean, there's just week after week in my list examples of what they're doing to make our country white and to take away rights from people who are not white, straight, Christian, and male. And the fabric of our country is changing. Yes, the battle for the truth, the 4,300 lies so far, you know, 7.6 a day. That's what we're raising our families in. You know, this is going to take a long time to recover, but I think we have to fight for our values and for what we believe. And, yeah, if you need to take a week off, that's why I always say, like, take a week, come back You can listen to the podcast. You'll catch up on everything that you missed.
Yeah.
And then start fighting. Yeah. You know, it's, I would love to take a week off, and I will when this is all done. I keep, like, I have this vision of having, like, a beautiful woman on an island with no Wi-Fi. That's my, like, life goal. to write the end and then that. No, yeah.
Right.
That's what gets me through. But yes, we will get through this. And we just have to all do what we can do and whatever we're all comfortable with. And I totally agree with you. Like, the in-person stuff is super helpful.
Well, you certainly made us feel better.
Yeah.
That was the whole point of this podcast.
Yeah,
we just
really
want to be reassured by you that we're going to be okay. It's very selfish. I agree. But
yeah, now I can finally sleep tonight for once. Amy.
Yeah, you have to sleep at night. You have to sleep every night. And it's going to be fine. We're going to get to the other side. It's just, it's sort of like the elephant years or dog years, whatever you want to use. Like, every month of him is like a year to get our country back to what we've lost for that month. So I just think we want to do whatever we can. And I can't overemphasize the importance of what's happening in 90 days with these midterms. And if we can take back the Congress, both houses, if we can take, we definitely can take the House. If we can take the Senate too and stop what's happening with the Supreme Court, that's going to be a huge benefit to us. And that those are both, I mean, the House is a very reasonable goal. The Senate also, I mean, Texas could swing our way. Nevada could swing our way. So Tennessee could swing our way. There are possibilities.
Yeah.
So we have to do everything we can in these next 90 days to fight and make sure our friends are on the voter rolls, because 9 states have purged their voter rolls. Just everything we can to get out the vote and make sure people, like, stand up and sit. Don't say, oh, I had to wait for 10 minutes. I drove away. Like, look what happened in Ohio this week. You know, every single vote matters. We all have to vote. Even if you think it doesn't matter, it matters. So this election is super, super important.
Yes, yes. All of our listeners, if some of you don't vote, you don't get to listen to this podcast anymore. Yeah. We're drawing the line.
Oh, my God. Everyone's got to vote. I mean, we're going to lose Roe v. Wade. We're going to lose gay marriage, you know, if we don't stop this. So those will be gone in the next year. I don't care what people say, that, you know, that he's going to stack the Supreme Court and those things.
Yeah.
The basic that, especially your generation, I'm older than you ladies, but, you know, things your generation has taken for granted with, because you've grown up in diversity, those things will be gone.
Yeah.
And really quickly. So if you think it doesn't matter to you because it hasn't yet, it will. It most certainly will. So with that, get to the damn poll.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for your time tonight.
And for everything you do. What you do is so important. And listeners, we encourage you to please. Amy, what's your handle on Twitter so that people can follow you and get all of the latest updates?
Yeah, on Twitter, I'm at Amy_Siskind. The website is theweeklylist.org. And you can also find a link there to find the podcast. The podcasts are also called The Weekly List.
Yes.
And my book is called The List, which is the first year of the Trump era. And I'm in conversations about what to do with the second year, which unfortunately we're on week 91, is coming soon. But the first 52 weeks with a table of contents that makes it super easy, or excuse me, an index to sort through as these items come up is available. So
awesome.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you so much again.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Amy.
All right. Good
Take
night.
Care.
Thank you.
Take
Good
care.
Night.
All right. So that was Amy Siskind. I wanted to ask her a question about whether she thought Hillary and Humo were endgame, but then I realized that that would be very inappropriate to the
Yeah, I think discussion. That was wise.
She might have liked it. I don't know. There were a lot. There were so many questions that I wanted to ask.
So I could listen to Amy Siskind talk for days on end.
What
she's
a pro.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So
good.
Listen to her pod, which I will for sure start doing.
I know. I need that kind of roundup because it is it's not even a fire hose. It's like a wave pool of news that hits us.
I need a roundup that isn't the guys on Pod Save America. Although I do love them.
I can't
listen to any more white men.
I'm tapped.
Yeah. I'm absolutely tapped.
Yeah.
I mean, I do like them. Whatever. But anyway, listen to Amy Siskind's podcast, Faux Show.
Yes. All right, now it's time for our listener question. You guys have been so great with sending us questions. We have a lot we want to get to, but we're going to spread them out. All right, so our listener's question is, I identify as bisexual, but I find myself being more attractive to women than men.
Duh.
I wonder what that means. So a couple of years ago...
There's a word for that.
So a couple of years ago, I came out to my folks. Didn't go so good, but not so bad. I come from a Mexican family. When I came out, my mother cried and didn't talk to me for a few days. And my father always had a suspicion. That's just a backstory. Anyways, I don't really flaunt my sexuality around my folks. Just one of those things where, okay, now they all know. Of course, they think it's a phase. So I want to start dating again, and I need your advice. All right, here we go, Sarah.
All right.
I just have a feeling that I'm going to be dating a woman. Again, what makes you think that when you're more attracted to women? Think on that a little bit. Ruminate. Okay. When do you think is a good time to introduce your girlfriend to your folks or bring them around the family? There's a lot of things at play here.
Yeah, a lot.
One, I will say just from my wife's experience with a Catholic Latin family, that definitely is a kind of common experience mm-hmm. that they might not take these things well, especially if they're immigrants and all that stuff mm-hmm. is very taboo. You know, when Cecilia lived in Peru, she kind of didn't even know that being a lesbian was something that she could be, even though mm-hmm. this is something where she's like, looking back, I feel so dumb that I didn't know sooner, that I didn't come out sooner, that I was seeing men for so long. But those cultures are so heteronormative and Catholic, yeah. stereotypically, and that is deep-rooted. Mm-hmm. But also... it sounds like even though your family is having a hard time, that they do love you and they probably just want to see you happy. Mm-hmm. It might take them some time to getting used to. I wouldn't bring around anybody who's an awful person. So make sure that you date good women.
Yeah. There's definitely that vetting process. One thing I would recommend that you watch, like, as sort of a pop culture reference would be the Thanksgiving episode that Lena Waithe wrote and directed for Master of None.
Great idea.
It is the most picture perfect, like, accurate representation of that whole bringing that girlfriend around for the first time kind of thing to a family who, you know, loves you dearly, but is maybe a little uncomfortable about this part of your life and who you are. So definitely watch that. Just in general, I think everyone should, but
yeah.
I think, you know, bringing someone around your parents, that's, to me, that was like the thing that, like, I waited until I had a, like, girlfriend to tell my mom that I was gay, because I felt like I needed, like, a receipt, you know?
Oh,
like,
sure.
I needed, this is how I felt when I was, like, 22. I needed, like, that person to sort of legitimize this, that it wasn't just like, oh, this is just a thing that I'm feeling. Like, no, this is like a thing. Like, I have a person in my life and I'm dating and, you know, that sort of thing. It almost like legitimizes it, but that's not necessary to come out. But yeah, I think that there is never, ever going to be a downside to just waiting a while to introduce that person. You know, if you aren't comfortable, you know, wait until you're comfortable, wait until your person is comfortable, because there's really nothing worse than being thrown into something like that when you're not really, like, as the person, like, there would be nothing worse for me to meet my girlfriend's parents if I wasn't ready, because unless you're both really, really fucking ready to possibly go into, like, an awkward situation, then it's not going to go well, and it's really not fair to put anyone else in that position. So, you know, wait until you really feel like it's the right person. And then just be clear in your communication with this girlfriend that you bring around eventually. Like, you know, here's what we're walking into. Here's what could happen. And have, you know, kind of plan it ahead of time to where you have a bit of an escape route if possible, if it's really awkward. And then just go from there. Clear communication.
I would also say try to, when you do meet the right person, try to sell your family on that person ahead of time.
Yes.
So, you know, start integrating them into stories, start, yep. you know, show them pictures. And if they see that you're happy and you have like positive things to say about this other person, then when they meet them, it won't be such this shock. You don't want to mm-hmm. just bring someone out of the blue.
Yeah. Limit surprises.
Limiting surprises is a good thing. And, you know, you don't have to, like, every girl you date doesn't need to meet your parents. Like, parents, you know, they get attached. Like, even I had a girlfriend once whose mom kicked them out of the house when they came out, and it was not a good situation, and they did not like the first girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And so I was very afraid to meet this mom. And then I met her, and she was great to me. She was so nice and mm-hmm. very welcoming and treated me, you know. So it's kind of like, one, you never know. Two, I think that in that scenario, it's just, I'm such an awesome girlfriend. What mom wouldn't love me?
Duh.
But no. but I think it was a matter of like, it was timing. The mom had comfortable to get used to this idea that, you know, I was part of the life, and it was like a very serious relationship. So, she knew that if she wanted to spend time with her daughter, I was probably going to be there too. And she was cool with that. So, you know, parents can definitely come around and come a far way. And even though it seems unfair, and even though part of you might be like, I shouldn't have to do all this, they should just be accepting. Like,
reality is that they aren't. So,
the reality is that they're a little bit weird about it. So do whatever handholding you need to do. And
I think you'll be all right. I hope that helped.
Yeah. Hope that helped you and anybody else. I'm sure other people are.
That's a whole thing. I remember being very, extremely nervous about that. Part of coming out, like, to the point where I was like, just like nauseous from nervousness. I knew I shouldn't be, because you have to sort of trick yourself, because like your brain is telling you to be nervous about this thing, but even though like your heart is like, it's gonna be fine.
Yeah,
but it's a process, and I can tell you, after like 10 years of being out, it doesn't ever fully go away. There's always some little sort of twinge of anxiety when you think about introducing, you know, a partner to your parents. I still feel that way. So, you know, it's okay.
I think my mom is still Facebook friends with one of my exes.
Yeah,
and I had asked her repeatedly, could you not? Because it was a situation where
could
I
you
cut
not,
off
Dottie.
Yeah. I cut off contact.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they were exchanging Christmas cards. I'm like, hold on there. And she's like, well, she looked at me like a mom, and I'm like, but
right.
Stop it.
Yeah, we'll get into breakups as they involve your parents later on. But for introducing,
that's a whole topic.
Just communicate and, you know, have an escape route if necessary. So,
all right. So if you have a question you would like us to answer, you can shoot it to us in an email, dykingout@gmail.com, or you can send us a message on our Facebook page, Facebook.com/dykingout. Instagram, Twitter. We'll take your questions any way we can. And also, we have our new website up, dykingout.com. Check it out. It's nice, and you can see pictures of us and some of our guests and Karina the intern. We're all there, living happily together on a website. And you can also, while you're there, donate to our Patreon. So that's patreon.com/dykingout. If you contribute to us, you can get access to our extra content, Dyking Off Topic. You can get temporary tattoos. You can get an enamel pin. And this money helps us keep the podcast going. It helps us pay all the fees for having the websites, for holding the media online, for pushing out the content, for getting the sound to sound good, and all the things that we kind of want to do with creating even more queer content and being able to just get more lesbian stuff into the universe. That's our goal, is to just
that's
keep...
why we're on this planet.
Yeah, we were put here for a reason.
Yes.
And we won't go until our web series is a reality. So keep keep supporting us. We appreciate it so much. Thank you for listening, and dig out with us next week.
Bye. Bye.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.